Because the king was certainly talking about him today without naming him, delivering a speech at the opening of Parliament in Ottawa that made it absolutely clear that the American president should abandon his efforts to persuade Canada to become America's 51st state. But at the very moment His Majesty was speaking in Ottawa, Lord Mandelson was talking in Washington.
I credit President Trump's acute political instincts.
That speech in Washington gushed about the American president and those acute political instincts of his. So on a day of two contrasting speeches, can we really continue walking the line over Trump? Or at some point, are we not going to have to make a choice about being with him or against him?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock, detectives believe the car that drove into crowds at Liverpool Football Club's parade yesterday had followed an ambulance through a roadblock. Merseyside police say 11 people remain in hospital tonight. They've been given extra time to question a man on suspicion of attempted murder and drug driving. The Home Secretary, Yvette Cooper, has been visiting Liverpool and has praised the emergency services.
The professionalism of their response, the way in which they worked together to make sure that lives were saved, and to be able to keep people safe, I think is hugely important, and we really thank them for that.
The King's warned Canada is facing unprecedented challenges as he opened the country's parliament. Charles told MPs in Ottawa that the world's become more dangerous and unstable. His visits being widely seen as a show of support in the face of Donald Trump's annexation threats. His Majesty's also spoken of his love for the country.
This is my 20th visit to Canada, spread over the course of more than half a century, and my first as sovereign. Every time I come to Canada, a little more of Canada seeps into my bloodstream, and from there, straight to my heart.
The International Monetary Fund says trade tensions linked to Donald Trump's tariffs plans will reduce UK economic growth next year. But the organisation has upgraded its forecast for this year to 1.2%, saying an economic recovery is underway in Britain. But Roger G. Wolb, political and economic commentator, has told LBC he thinks the IMF has got this wrong.
There are so many anti-growth measures this government has put in place. I just don't know how the IMF can say that. And as far as an economic recovery, sure, I mean, there are some numbers that are looking better and some have proven here and there, but I sure don't feel like we're in a boom. I mean, there's been a 0.1% improvement. I don't think that merits standing on the roof and shouting about anything.
Reform UK has made what it calls a pitch to working people, saying it would scrap the two-child benefit cap and reinstate winter fuel payments. Leader Nigel Farage says net zero and diversity policies would be scrapped to save money. And Transport for London has revealed plans to increase the congestion charge from £15 to £18 a day. It also wants to scrap the residents' discount for both petrol and diesel vehicles from next January. LBC weather, rain clearing eastwards to leave a mostly dry night, showers lingering in central areas, a low of 2 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Daryl Jackson.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Simon Marks.
And I'm in for Ben Kentish tonight and tomorrow night and the next night. And coming up at midnight, we are going to have the first news for you about a new report into the future of cannabis laws in the UK. It contains some bombshell suggestions that are designed to set the stage for a robust national debate. And we are going to kickstart that debate right after the news at midnight. We will tell you what the report says and ask you what you think of its findings. But this hour, two very contrasting speeches were made today by very prominent UK figures on the issue of Donald Trump. As you know, the King and Queen are in Canada, and His Majesty took to the throne of the Canadian Parliament in Ottawa and delivered his speech on the year of legislative action ahead by Prime Minister Mark Carney's government. And while King Charles never uttered Donald Trump's name, the speech's target was absolutely clear.
Today, Canada faces another critical moment. Democracy, pluralism, the rule of law, self-determination and freedom are values which Canadians hold dear and ones which the government is determined to protect. The system of open global trade that, while not perfect, has helped to deliver prosperity for Canadians for decades, is changing. Canada's relationships with partners are also changing.
Canada, he said, needs to confront reality that in the years since the Second World War, it has never faced greater instability than it is facing now. All of that, of course, was a message directed at Washington, D.C. Donald Trump should abandon his quest to make Canada America's 51st state, not least because the same king who will welcome the American president to the U.K. for his second state visit is the very monarch who serves as Canada's head of state. But at the very moment that speech was being made in Ottawa, Lord Mandelson was also making a speech back in Washington, D.C.
I credit President Trump's acute political instincts in identifying the anxieties gripping not only millions of Americans, but also far more pervasive global trends, economic stagnation, a sense of irreversible decline, the lost promise of meaningful work for so many people. These are the giants now that we must confront head on.
He said President Trump had given Europe a justifiable kick in the pants, forcing the continent to accept that the security guarantees provided by successive American governments since 1945 really could not continue forever. He paid tribute to the American president for forging a trade deal with the UK that, of course, has still left baseline tariffs of 10% in place on almost all British exports. And when it came to Ukraine, he thought Donald Trump's newfound realization that Vladimir Putin is completely crazy was, well, spot on.
I think the president got it right over the weekend when he said that Putin's gone crazy. I mean, crazy in his indifference to international opinion, crazy in his disrespect for the president of the United States and what he's trying to do to bring peace, but notably gone crazy in the continuing death and destruction that he is visiting upon Ukraine and its people.
At no point did his host at the Atlantic Council or any of the very well-behaved audience members challenge him on the soft soap routine that he was unleashing on the American president. And look, I get it. The king is Canada's head of state and absolutely has to defend the nation's sovereignty. Peter Mandelson is the UK's ambassador to the USA and absolutely has to administer flattery at every turn just to get himself admitted to the Oval Office. But two very contrasting speeches on the same day surely indicate that the UK is now engaged in a pretty uncomfortable contortion. On the one hand, seeing Trump as a bit of a thug even in his own neighbourhood. On the other hand, praising him for those acute political instincts of his. This cannot be sustainable for very long. Surely we are not going to be able to keep this up all the way until 2028 and possibly beyond. Or are we? Maybe you think we're getting it right, speaking out where we need to and using charm and diplomatic guile to advance our interests where it's possible. Let me know what you think. 0345 6060 973 is the number to call. You can WhatsApp messages to that number as well. You can text 84850. You can ask Alexa to send a comment to LBC, or you can even find me on Blue Sky and send me a message there. What do you think the UK should be doing about its handling of Donald Trump? Are we getting it right on a day when the king pushes back against Donald Trump, without naming him, of course, in Canada, but Lord Mandelson, the British ambassador to the USA, certainly appeared to be pouring respect in Donald Trump's direction. To get our conversation started tonight, I'm delighted to say we are joined by Dennis McShane, former Europe minister during Sir Tony Blair's second term as Prime Minister, and he is the author of books including Brexiternity, The Uncertain Fate of Britain. Dennis McShane, thanks very much indeed for being on the programme tonight. Do you you think we got it right today? Bit of a hard message from the King, much softer message from Lord Mandelson?
Isn't that always how you deal with things? Hard cop, soft cop? It's quite interesting to hear Peter, very, very old friend, talk about the problems of the lost generations. It's finally actually admitting that recent governments of all stripes, including our own Labour government, Barack Obama, or European governments, have got it wrong by ignoring the needs of maybe about half of the population who didn't go to university and aren't part of the kind of elites who do well. So, but on diplomacy, yes, I think that Trump, President Trump, is very, very difficult to manage. But of all the different countries that are trying to manage him, I think probably we're probably making the best fist of it. My only regret is, of course, we're isolated from Europe. We're not sitting there working all the time with Europe. It's nice having the big meetings now and then, but before we were there Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, if need be, talking and helping to shape policy. But that's another story for another time. But yeah, I think Mr. Trump tonight has said even more critical things about Putin. He's finally realised that Vladimir Putin is playing him for an idiot. And the one thing Mr. Trump doesn't suffer from is an excess of modesty. And treating him and holding him up to make him look like a fool, that's a really good way to rile him up. And that's exactly where we want President Trump to be in terms of how to handle Putin.
So just on what Donald Trump has said within the last few hours about Vladimir Putin, I think his most recent social media posting observed that what Vladimir Putin doesn't realise is that if it weren't for me, lots of really bad things would have already happened to Russia. And I mean really bad. He's playing with fire. Not entirely clear what that means. Maybe it means that Donald Trump is preparing to engage in applying fresh sanctions in Russia's direction. But when it came to Lord Mandelson's speech today, Dennis McShane, I mean, there were points where I thought he's laying it on with a trowel here. I mean, you can go a little bit too far down the road of pouring praise on even Donald Trump, can't you?
Wasn't it Disraeli who said the art of politics is always to lay it on with a trowel? In other words, if you're going to have to build big somebody up, tell him how absolutely wonderful he or she is, and that's the best way to hopefully get he or she to come along your path as well. But at the same time, we've now, having rejected a year ago, February 2023, the proposition of President Macron for this idea of having European NATO troops stationed in Ukraine. Now Keir Starmer's adopted it. The previous government didn't. I mean, there's an enormous sea change, Simon. I'm not just making a European point, but I track Europe. I speak the languages. I write about it more than I write about British politics. The change simply after 9-10 years of sneering by failed Tory Brexit prime ministers, always cocking a snoop at the rest of Europe. We've now got, you know, down to earth, get on, pragmatic, boring old British, let's see what we can get out of this for ourselves, but let's also work and cooperate. And that's a big sea change. And Putin realises that too, because he loved the idea of Britain, and I mean, he was a big supporter of Brexit. You've got problems now for people like Nigel Farage, who, when President Trump was elected, I did debates with Reform MPs on other outlets, and all they always said was, just do what Trump does. Whatever Trump's doing, let's do the same. And now, you know, nobody in this country thinks that Trump is behaving very well. You've got the other, Mr. Farage, with a record, certainly, of using the same excuses President Putin was using to justify his interventions in Ukraine. He stopped and dropped all that. Ms. Badenoch doesn't quite know what to say. So, you know, the Prime Minister, I think he's a bit unhappy on home turf, but I have to say, internationally, I think he's doing rather well. And having Peter Mandelson there, you know, Peter Mandelson's a very good political operator, and he works very well with whoever's in charge in a Labour government, and he's serving the Prime Minister and the country quite well at the moment.
Well, without question, but are we not riding a tiger here? I mean, how sustainable is this contortion? Do we really think that we can get all the way through 2028 without ultimately having to make a decision about Donald Trump?
I think every country has to make a decision about Donald Trump, but we should be aligning ourselves with Canada, exactly what the King is doing today. The most political speech, far more political than he ever makes when he's speaking from the throne in the House of Lords. I can tell you, I used to listen to all those speeches and you could hardly stay awake after the first 5 minutes, and the smell of kind of mothballs of ermine from all the lords and so on. Now, he's doing that, but we're also opening up to Canada, to Australia, to Japan, to New Zealand, to South Korea, South Africa. We're building through the Commonwealth partly, but I think Britain's diplomatic services, I was there for 8 years in the Foreign Office. I'm not a Foreign Office toady, but they're very good. And we're building a big, big, strong coalition that says Donald Trump's tariffs, which is a huge tax on working class jobs. He's complaining that Europeans sell their cars to America. Mercedes, Volkswagen, and BMWs he complained about. Simon, of course they do. There's a Mercedes, Volkswagen, and VW, Volkswagen and BMW plants in the United States. Does Donald Trump know that? They're providing jobs for Americans, not for Germans, by building cars in America.
Yeah.
I mean, I did the auto industry for a long time before I became an MP in the international auto industry. And I just felt like, again, every time poor Donald opens his mouth, he reveals that he's got, more PhDs than anybody else. Now, I can say that because I'm right out of politics. If I was a minister, I would just have to
you'd be swallow. Talking about his acute political instincts, Dennis. I'm always amused by he keeps referring to the fact that when he travelled to Germany he didn't see any Buicks or Chevrolets on the road there, and he seems determined that these tariffs are somehow going to create vast amounts of opportunity for Germans who could go out and buy Mercedes and Audis to start buying Buicks. I mean, that seems pretty unlikely to me.
Well, I'm happy if he wants me to be an ambassador for America, he lends me a Cadillac and free petrol for the next 10 years, watch me whiz around London. That is to say, if there's low traffic neighbourhoods and Sadiq Khan's policies, anybody can drive around London ever again. That's very unfair, low below the belt.
No, we will be talking about the congestion charge a little bit later this hour. Dennis McShane, thank you so much for being on the programme tonight. Dennis McShane, former Europe Minister during Sir Tony Blair's second term as Prime Minister, and the author of several books, including Brexiternity, The Uncertain Fate of Britain. So what do you think? Do you think that the speech that the King made in Canada today, pushing back against Donald Trump's coveting of Canada, can happily coexist with Lord Mandelson on the same day talking about Donald Trump's acute political instincts? Call me now and tell me what you think. 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Ask Alexa to send a comment to LBC. It is coming up to 18 minutes past 11.
This is LBC.
Ready, steady, the Toyotathon sale event is on!
Race down to your nearest Toyota centre and save up to an extra £1,000 on a new Toyota. But hurry, deals must end 31st of May. The Toyotathon sale event is on. Offer valid on eligible new vehicle orders 1st to 31st of May and registered by 31st of July 2025. Retail customers only. T&Cs apply. See toyota.co.uk for details.
Find top-rated outdoor dining products on Amazon. Like this pizza oven with 5-star reviews, you'll get value and tasty pizza. Or these barbecue gloves. Remember to take off before eating.
Or this large windproof umbrella.
Because nobody wants a wet pizza. Amazon. Find highly rated products at prices you'll love.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Check you're on track for a happy retirement with PensionBee's easy-to-use app. Because when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. When investing, your capital is at risk.
Simon Marks on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Or text 84850, which is what Debbie has done. She says, I think the king is being passive-aggressive today. It's like the world trying to manage the mad old auntie in the family who has no filter. Maybe the mad old uncle. Let's go to the phone lines. Phil is in Broadstairs in Kent. Good evening, Phil. What would you like to say?
Good evening, Simon. I just wanted to ask, do you remember Charles Wheeler?
Yes, of course. Absolutely. Yeah, well, the great, much missed Charles Wheeler.
I think you're one of the greats.
Oh, that's very sweet of you.
You seriously are. I've followed every correspondent in America ever since the 70s, and you are really up there.
Well, that's very, very nice of you.
It's a pleasure. It's just great to talk to you. I'm not doing a Peter Mandelson, by the way. I just wonder, I mean, it was great to listen to Dennis McShane. There's never a man who's backwards and coming forwards when he wants to tell us about his CV, and his modesty is one of his greatest virtues. But I did want to say that I think this is a Janus head that we've got at the moment, and this business about how do we do the ride the tiger. And I think ultimately the one rule I've learned from your many reports over the last few years is that you can't trust a word that Trump says. It's wrong to say, and I follow it in American news outlets, it's wrong to say that we have a business agreement with Trump and America. We don't. We have a document of understanding, and they're going to let a few of our luxury cars in. There's nothing more than that on the line.
Well, and steel and aluminium. Let's remember that.
Well, okay.
I mean, because Lord Mandelson today was actually, he went into more detail today than I'd heard any British government official going into previously, where he actually told that audience in Washington that the country was 2 weeks away from thousands of jobs being lost in the steel, aluminium and car industries when that agreement was struck, but of course not signed, because there's no signatures on the documents.
Absolutely. Well done. That's exactly right. But what he doesn't mention, because Peter's always been good at looking at behaving in certain ways to people who are above him in the social structure, and people who are below get a different side of his tongue. But I mean, if you look at who supplies this stuff, it's mostly Canada that does that. It comes from Canada. So I mean, our contribution, I'm sure, will be mighty, and he'll have saved some jobs, and that's great. But Trump cannot be trusted. And the other thing I want to say to you, Simon, is that he's about to lay waste to the entire university sector.
Yes.
They're going to be flooding out of there. I've got friends, because I taught in university for nearly 15 years, and I've got friends, I've just come away from a different field of research, but Keats Conference, and I met a load of them. They came from all sorts of high-level university courses, and they're leaving. Why? Because they know that the Trojan horse, which is what DEI is, it's a Trojan horse, is to get into the university and lay a few gloves on them, and then to say that they're anti-Semitic is another tack they're doing. But the real target is science and their hatred of, I mean, this goes back to 2000 with Bush and creation theory and all that stuff. They hate anything to do with science because they see it as liberal research. And therefore, if you look at their cuts, which he's making, the cuts are really frightening. I mean, he's taking 72% off maths, 80% off physics, 57% off chemistry, 53% off astronomy. Earth science is 80%. Well, that gives you an idea where, I mean, what's America going to be?
Well, he's going to be
a research desert, isn't it?
Phil, he's doing two things simultaneously. He's laying waste to the universities because he's accusing them all of harboring anti-Semites that participated in those pro-Palestinian protests last year, protests that are absolutely covered by America's First Amendment constitutional free speech protections. But simultaneously, he is actually redefining what science means, what the definition is. He signed an executive order last week that reclassifies basically what from his perspective, real, respectable science is all about. And it's right. not to do with any of that DEI stuff for a start. No research goes on into that any longer if that executive order has any impact. And I think the UK is missing an opportunity here because, as you note, so many international students are now either not applying.
We can have a lot of them.
Because they're not going to get visas to go to the United States. Those are now being blocked. Or they're packing their bags and getting out. And how is this country simultaneously making it harder for international students to come here? Because you could clean
Absolutely. Can I make one last point? I mean, I think the most important thing people don't understand is who elected Trump. Now, if I could just make one point. In some of the 3,300 counties in America no longer have newspapers. 80% mm-hmm. of those who voted, where Trump did really well, 80% never finished high school. Of his electors, mm-hmm. right? So that's one thing. The other thing is, if you look at the attack on Harvard, and I do believe in this theory of the Trojan horse, it's a war on woke, but it's irrelevant. The real thing they want is like Henry VIII. They want the monastery, they want the money in the monasteries. But if we could get into the idea of why they attacked Harvard, I think it's principally because he, and I said this to Matt Fry last week, he is an anti-Semite. He said that he didn't want non-Jewish looking accountants in his casinos in Atlanta City. He was very clear about he's made that very clear, and several people have attested to it. But the real reason is because those universities have 20% Jewish student enrollment.
I do not think I'm going to take issue with you on that, Phil. I do not think that is the reason he's going after Harvard. And also, by the way, I don't think that it's fair to brand him anti-Semitic. I mean, his own daughter is married to Jared Kushner. They are absolutely keeping an Orthodox Jewish home. His grandchildren from the Jared Kushner Ivanka Trump marriage are practicing Jews as well. So I actually think the Harvard thing might be about something else, which is that Barron Trump, his son, was turned down by Harvard. And it may well be that there's a lingering grudge there.
I agree to disagree with you on that, because I think Columbia, both Columbia and Harvard, have at least 20% Jewish enrollments. And he has a feeling that they never treated him properly in New York.
Well, that I think is absolutely... Well, and Columbia, he had a land dispute with Columbia, didn't he? That I think was worth $400 million, and then he pulled $400 million of Columbia's funds out. So,
but he did go to Yale, for God's sake.
The business school as well, the name of which I'm currently forgetting.
One wonders what he learned there, Simon.
Say that again?
One wonders what he learned there.
Well, Phil, we will explore that another day. Thank you very much indeed for calling in. Pleasure to talk to you. That's Phil in Broadstairs. Let's go to Jerry in Whitley Bay. Jerry, good evening. What would you like to say about these twin speeches today? King Charles in Canada and Peter Mandelson in Washington.
On the King, I was absolutely appalled.
Appalled?
Appalled.
Why?
The monarchy is above politics, and the fact that the King has never turned up for any opening of Canadian Parliament for about 20 years, I think.
Well, the last time the speech was delivered from the throne was 1957, but I think the monarch has been there for the opening of Parliament previously, although not delivered the speech from the throne. But explain why you were appalled by what he said.
Right. What I will do, I'll put up a contrast for you. The late Queen, what was her position on net zero?
Well, of course, we don't know.
We don't know. Mm. Was she Conservative or Labour?
We don't know.
Good point. Any political position you would like to quote from the Queen?
No political position. I suppose you could argue that through her many Christmas Day speeches, it was fairly clear that her concerns lay with the poor and the underprivileged. But I mean, he was there to read us. He was delivering essentially the King's speech, right? He was delivering a speech that Mark Carney wrote for him in exactly the same way as when he goes to the House of Commons, Houses of Parliament here and delivers the King's speech. He's reading the speech that now Keir Starmer writes for him. So why were you appalled by what he did?
Okay, all right. Let's pretend I'm the Prime Minister and you're the King.
Yeah.
I've just written Enoch Powell's Rivers of Blood speech.
Mm.
I've passed that from the Prime Minister's office to the King's office. You're just going to approve that and read that?
Well, I'm not clear how much back and forth there is that is permissible, but in this case, he was defending the sovereignty of a country of which he is head of state. He is the Canadian monarch. The country's sovereignty, as Mark Carney and millions of Canadians see it, is coming under threat from its neighbour to the south. So I'm not sure why it's appalling for the King, on behalf of the Canadian government, to deliver a speech that suggests that Canada's sovereignty, the sovereignty of the country of which he is head of state, is inviolable.
Well, my point is that you do not... The whole point of our constitutional monarchy is that basically if Jeremy Corbyn is Prime Minister or Nigel Farage is Prime Minister, that if they pass a law, you rubber stamp it and you shut your mouth. So basically what he's done is he's taken a political position on behalf of Mark Carney against Donald Trump. That is an overtly political position that he has taken.
Do you think it makes it harder for him to host Donald Trump for a second state visit?
Well, it certainly won't make it any easier, let's put it that way.
Because you could argue he's taking a political position to invite President Trump for a second state visit. Never happened before. Unprecedented.
No, he's not. Because, obviously, Keir Starmer has asked the King to do it on the government's behalf, and he is doing it, and
He was reading a speech on Mark Carney's behalf today.
Right, but I have no doubt that the King will do what is necessary in order to further the government's position of the day, which is a political position that Keir Starmer has chosen to take.
Yes, I would just argue, Jerry, that that's exactly what he was doing in Canada today. He was furthering the Canadian government's position, and in the same way, he's head of state of Canada, and that is his job. But I appreciate the conversation. Very interesting discussion. And we will continue talking about the contortion that I think we witnessed today in terms of UK policy towards the United States with that pretty tough speech from the King in Canada, a message to Donald Trump, no doubt, hands off Canada, but also a much more conciliatory speech from Lord Peter Mandelson, Lord Mandelson, the UK's ambassador to the United States. That's all still to come. The time is now 29 minutes to midnight, and the news headlines come from Daryl Jackson.
11 people are still in hospital after a car was driven into crowds at Liverpool's Premier League title parade yesterday. It's believed the vehicle followed an ambulance through a roadblock to access Water Street, where dozens of people were injured. A van driver has been jailed for at least 12 years after running down a 3-year-old girl in Manchester in February, who then died from her injuries. A court heard Raoul Rehrman, who's 36 and from the city, had taken at least 20 lines of cocaine at the time. And the King's warned Canada is facing a critical moment, with the world a more dangerous place. Charles has opened the country's parliament in Ottawa at a time when Donald Trump threatened to make Canada part of the United States. LBC weather, rain clearing eastwards to leave a mostly dry night, showers lingering in central areas and a low of 2 degrees.
This is LBC.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. Holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
This summer, get Sun Lounger flopping without all that website hopping with EasyJet Holidays. Package holidays start from £299 per person. And if you find the same holiday cheaper elsewhere, we'll beat the price. Search EasyJet Holidays. Get out there. Price based on 2 adults for 5 nights. Limited availability. See price guarantee online. Atom protected. T's and C's apply.
Calling all young creatives. Kickstart your career in media. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12 at Global Academy. Globalacademy.com.
Barclays ready-made investments. The clue's in the name. Not Barclays where do I begin investments. You can start from £50. That's why they're not difficult to get started investments either. And you can choose your risk level. So they're hardly in at the deep end investments. So if you've got savings and you want to help grow your money over 5 years or more, then search Barclays Ready Made Investments. Make money work for you. Investing is not for everyone. The value of investments can fall as well as rise, and you may get back less than you invest. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC with Simon Marks. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
And we're talking this hour about how the UK should handle Donald Trump. We seem to me to be engaging in a bit of a contortion, a good cop, bad cop routine today by the King in Canada. He was the bad cop, and the good cop was Peter Mandelson, the British ambassador to the United States, making a speech in Washington, D.C., that at times certainly appeared to be offering a bit of a soft soap routine to the president of the United States. Can we continue engaging in this kind of carrot and stick approach, or are we eventually going to have to make a choice about the nature of our relationship with the United States? We will come back to that conversation shortly, but first, we learnt today that London's congestion charge is going to rise to £18 next year. That is up from the current 15 quid daily fee. And then it is going to rise every year going forward. Seb Dance, London's Deputy Mayor for Transport, insisted that the increase is needed to make sure the congestion fee remains, as he put it, fit for purpose. Reducing congestion, he said, is vital for the city and the economy. Well, joining me now with more on the announcement, Oliver Lord, the head of strategy for the Clean Cities campaign, who worked with Sadiq Khan on establishing the ULEZ scheme. And Mr. Lord, thank you very much indeed for being with us tonight. Explain the reason for the congestion charge to rise not just once next year, but then year on year for apparently the rest of time.
Well, I think actually this is a bit of a pragmatic approach from the mayor, because the congestion charge hasn't increased in 5 years. And to some extent, this is offering some certainty to motorists and especially businesses in the capital. I've actually been campaigning with them for the past year, the Federation of Small Businesses, because businesses are really worried that at the end of this year, they were going to lose the discount for electric vehicles. And there was no further decision around what might happen to it. So at least to some extent, the mayor is now baking in some discussion and certainty about the future of the charge. And that is important because it's also linked with how he deals with public transport fares year on year. So you might as well do it in the round.
But you say there's certainty. I mean, the only thing that's actually certain is that it's going up to £18 now. We have no idea what's going to happen year on year after that.
Well, actually, not quite right, because the mayor is committed, from what I can see, to tie this in with the discussion around public transport fares that happens every year, which often are increased far above what a lot of Londoners would like to see. And in fact, London's got some of the most expensive public transport in the capital. So I think it's right to kind of wrap them up together. So I think there is some certainty there, whereas actually we've seen an increase in congestion charge 5 years ago and no one really knew what was going to happen next until now.
And talk a little bit more about this decision regarding drivers of electric vehicles, because the news isn't all good for them, right? They've been enjoying a 100% discount on the congestion fee up until now, but from January the 2nd, they'll only enjoy a 25% discount if they're driving an electric car and a 50% discount if they're driving an electric van. And I can hear all sorts of electric vehicle drivers saying, well, why am I being targeted by this congestion charge given that I'm driving a clean vehicle?
Yeah, no, I do sympathise with that. Like I say, I've been campaigning with businesses around maintaining a discount. So I'm actually pleased to see that a discount remains. And I'm also pleased to see a differentiation between freight vehicles and private cars, because actually, you know, freight vehicles are much more essential to the running of London's economy. And also the sales of electric vans in the UK are lagging far behind other European countries, whereas actually in electric cars, we're doing quite well. I think we're up to about one in five cars that now sold are electric. And I think it's important that, you know, there is a contribution made from people driving into the centre of the city, because there's no use having a congestion charge if nobody actually pays it. And this, to some extent, is striking the right balance between maintaining the goals of the congestion charge, which has been running very effectively for the past 20 years, and also continuing to incentivise electric vehicles, which I think is right as well.
But one of the principal goals of the congestion charge was to clean up the environment. And if you're driving an electric vehicle that is not disgorging, you know, the remains of fossil fuels into the atmosphere, why should you have to pay anything?
I mean, I agree with you. I mean, the congestion charge fundamentally is there to manage traffic congestion. And if there is no charge on vehicles coming into central London, then we will get extensive levels of congestion, which businesses would also be very upset about. Diesel vans contribute some of the greatest, are one of the greatest contributors to air pollution in central London, which is why giving the greatest discount for electric vans is the right approach in compared to cars. But we can't continue to discount the congestion charge in perpetuity, if I can say that word properly. So I think it is the right balance.
And what do you say to business, small business owners particularly, who rely on vehicles to travel around London on a continuing basis to sustain their businesses? What do you say to them when they say, come on, this is an anti-car, anti-vehicle, and at some stage, an anti-business move that is going at a time of tremendous uncertainty about the country's economic future to penalise particularly small business people?
Well, firstly, to those that I've been talking with, I've been starting by saying thank you to those who have been investing in electric vans despite the economic circumstances at the minute. And it's absolutely right that we continue to reward those businesses that are going green, because that's important for our air quality and it's important for our climate. I would also add that we need far greater support for SMEs at the moment, particularly when it comes to protecting the climate. And I would suggest that there are grants that should be put in place to support small businesses to go electric, as well as dealing with the challenge around charging infrastructure. It needs to come together as a package, and I think that's something we'll be focused on in response to this consultation.
Oliver Lord, thank you very much for being on the programme tonight. And we should stress that we are only talking about the congestion charge here. We're not talking about ULEZ, which is not affected by today's announcement. Oliver Lord is the head of strategy for the Clean Cities campaign. Let's go back to your calls and texts about how we should handle Donald Trump. Should we be doing it through flattery, as Lord Mandelson, the UK ambassador to the United States, was doing today, or by more direct confrontation, as King Charles was doing today in Canada? And I'm very happy to say we've got a call from Canada. Anton, a first-time caller to LBC, is on the line from Bristol, not the Bristol on this side of the Atlantic, but the Bristol in Quebec. Anton, thanks very much indeed for calling in. What did you want to say about the King's speech today, and how you think it went down among your fellow Quebecois?
Well, I'm Canadian first, but I also was born in the UK, so I'm both British and Canadian.
Terrific.
But, I thought it was a good thing, and I was just listening to the previous guy, about saying he was appalled that King Charles mm-hmm. had come to Canada and had...
Well, he was appalled that he felt that King Charles had taken a political position.
So Donald Trump's position, he's the head of state as well, although granted he is a political appointee. But I mean, you know, that's nonsense. It's a, you know, it's a false statement. Like, I'll tell you, as a Canadian and a proud Canadian, I've been here 20 years. I think that the view of the monarch in Canada has improved because of this, you know. I know when the Queen died,
a lot of us thought that, you know, it was time to move on. And then we get all this nonsense about Governor Trudeau and, you know, the 51st state and Trump's land grab for our resources, mainly Alberta. That's what he's going for. And it's just like we can't do nothing, you know, because if we do, then what's he going to do? He's going to do a Putin on us, you know. And no. So I thought it was very Canadian of King Charles. He is the King of Canada. You know, all this nonsense about Commonwealth, you know, like he's our head of state.
But it's interesting the point you're making, Anton, about what Donald Trump's threat to turn Canada into the 51st state, the impact of that on the standing of the monarchy in Canada, because we already know the political impact, right? I mean, it led to Mark Carney being elected, to his conservative Pierre Poilievre losing his own seat, right? And clearly there was no major party out there advocating for Canada to become America's 51st state. But I think there's been less talk about this impact on the standing of the monarchy in the country. You think it sort of cemented that in place?
Yeah, well, I think with Charles, I think the expectation was so low. I mean, nobody could match the Queen, and I mean, I really don't think he has either. But I mean, the expectation was so low that there was talk everywhere. Oh, maybe we should follow Australia, and you know, we should become a republic. And then, of course, you see, Canadians always, as a Brit, I never understood this, but as a Canadian, I do. You know, I kind of see now how the British-Irish relationship works. And I think as a Canadian, and like I say, I've been here 20 years, as a Canadian, we're always in the shadow of America. And so... it's not that we're anti-American. It's just that over the last 10 years, we've seen this utter nonsense. You know, I mean, the politics down there, they're just toxic. And I mean, you know, the irony is that Canada is I think it's around 60% Catholic. You know, I mean, we're a religious country. But religious in the sense that of, you know, like Anglicanism almost. And we just see all this nastiness. And then he's trying to, Trump and MAGA and those people, they're trying to export that toxicity outside the borders. And I think that's when Canadians got really angry. And they said, you know what? Like we can deal with your nonsense on CNN and whatever, but to bring it to us, and that's when we have to say, well, and sorry, I'm waffling, but basically Charles has proven himself to actually be a decent guy, you know, and he's kind of liked, but anyway, the point being is with Trump, we've now decided, you know, we can't stand for this. We can't just sit down and let this guy talk about our country like that.
Yeah, and that's why I think it's very interesting, because there is a distinction between the way in which Prime Minister Mark Carney is handling Donald Trump and Prime Minister Keir Starmer is handling Donald Trump. So Mark Carney... Yeah. I think the night of his election victory made that speech to the Canadian people and said, it's over. Our historic relationship with the United States is done. We now have to move on, and we have to forge a new approach to America and a fresh set of arrangements. That's not something the British Prime Minister has ever said to people here. In fact, Sir Keir Starmer argues, and we heard it from Lord Mandelson today, that there is still this deep and abiding affinity between the American and the British people, and the two governments can, according to Peter Mandelson, today work together in a whole variety of areas, including the development of AI. You have a unique perspective on this because you're a Canadian citizen and a British citizen. Which of those two approaches, the Carney approach or the Starmer approach, do you think is going to prove to be more effective?
Well, it's kind of different because, well, there's a couple of things. First off, Donald Trump's mom was Scottish, and I think she had a reverence for the royal family, and Donald Trump does. And also, the UK is a powerful nation. Canada isn't. We're not, you know. We're kind of like not even second-rate America. I mean, we're not. Like, our strength is not in the military. Our strength is not in history. You know, our strength is in almost kind of like a Sweden, respected for our values. And I think that's it. But a lot of people don't realize why Trump respects Carney. I mean, Carney is a, you know, gazillionaire. He's got so much money, you know, and everybody talks about him as though, well, he's an economist. He works for the Bank of Canada and he works for the Bank of England. But, you know, the fact is he's loaded. He's got so much money as a businessman and an economist. And I think that's why Trump respects him. And to be honest, anybody after Trudeau, it's not surprising.
Right, but let's see how that goes, because obviously it's a very unpredictable game, this forging a relationship with President Trump. Anton, I'm enormously grateful to you. That was Anton, a first-time caller to LBC from Bristol in Quebec, of course, in Canada, bringing his perspective to this conversation. We're going to keep talking about these two very distinct speeches that we heard today from the King in Canada and from Lord Mandelson in Washington, D.C. The time now, 10 to midnight.
This is LBC.
Protect your dog from fleas and ticks with new Front Pro chewable tablets. Easy to give, each tablet offers 1 month's protection, helping to keep your dog happy, healthy and close. Because nothing should come between you. Front Pro chewable tablets from the makers of Frontline. Available online or in-store from pet specialist retailers. For more information, see uk.frontline.com. Contains a Foxolana.
Hillary's mid-season sale just got even better. Get up to 40% off hundreds of made-to-measure styles. Plus, get an extra 10% off absolutely everything. That's 10% off all blinds, curtains and shutters. And an extra 10% off our new range of awnings and pergolas, with measuring and fitting always included. Book your free in-home appointment today. Visit hillarys.co.uk. Hurry, Hillary's extra 10% off everything must end 2nd of June. Conditions apply.
I've had a few. Jimmy was my first. He was gorgeous and gave me so much space. Then there was Lorenzo. He was exciting, but also reliable. Elvis is my latest. I love him the most. He makes me feel so warm with his heated seats and steering wheel. It might sound strange to love a car and name them, but it's not just me. Almost every Honda Jazz owner stays with the Jazz and buys another. True love starts with a test drive. Honda, the power of dreams.
Recording at the solar farm. To learn more, visit aboutamazon.co.uk/sustainability.
This is LBC with Simon Marks.
And for more on these contrasting speeches that we heard today regarding the UK's relationship with the United States, I'm joined now by Sir Robin Niblett, the former director of Chatham House, one of its distinguished fellows, the author of the book The New Cold War, How the Contest Between the US and China Will Shape Our Century. And Sir Robin, when you look at these two speeches, I think it was a coincidence they happened on the same day. You had the King in Canada saying the country will always be an independent and sovereign state. And yet back in Washington, D.C., you appeared to see Lord Mandelson almost sort of romancing the Trump administration.
Well, I think
if I can turn to Mandelson's, Ambassador Mandelson's comment, Lord Mandelson's comment, I think, I'm not sure I would use the term romancing. I mean, look, all leaders right now are trying to romance Donald Trump because romancing him is better than getting it in the neck, you know, for trying to take a tough line and getting the kind of treatment that Cyril Ramaphosa, the South African Prime Minister, or, you know, Zelensky got. So I think what he's doing here is trying to thicken or open up further the wedge between Trump and Putin specifically. By, you know, complimenting President Trump for finally calling Putin crazy and the kind of steps he's taking. And very importantly, and Mandelson and the British Embassy have a very close eye on this, it looks like the US Senate is preparing a proposal for a large sanctions package on any countries buying Russian oil as a way of trying to bring pressure to bear on Putin to come to the negotiating table. So if there was ever a moment to be sending a signal to Donald Trump that his approach is correct towards Putin, in other words, his recent criticism of Putin, this is the right moment to do it. And it helps, obviously, that it then it kind of takes up a little bit of the airwaves and distracts people from the King's speech, however carefully worded it was, in Ottawa.
But there were other elements in that speech, Robin Niblett, by Lord Mandelson, that also seemed designed to appeal to Donald Trump, particularly where Lord Mandelson was talking about artificial intelligence. The US and the UK, he said, really ought to work together to exploit the future of AI. And he indicated that he absolutely did not believe that there should be regulation that, as he put it, might stifle the industry. I mean, that's a real give to Donald Trump in negotiations, isn't it?
Well, again, it's complicated because, of course, the UK, despite striking its recent deal with the EU on a trade agreement, has been very careful to try to keep three areas of potential regulatory divergence open. And this was a position the Conservative Party had, but interestingly, it's been adopted by Starmer's Labour government as well. Those three areas are digital technology, broadly writ, which includes AI, financial technology, and gene editing of agricultural produce. So in areas where the UK believes the EU's precautionary principle is overly restrictive, and where the UK, in a way, has nothing to gain from it. And these are areas where the UK, by the way, has comparative advantage compared to continental Europe and the rest of the EU. The UK is rather cleverly trying to find space to diverge from the EU, feeling it's not really going to hit any UK businesses that have access to the EU market already. And you might as well try and team up a little bit with the Americans, where the UK could maybe strike some, you know, some deals and get some new investment. So it is a continuity, if I may say, of a fairly established, actually, British position to look for space for the UK to sort of find a middle way between American, you know, techno freedom and libertarianism and the stifling hand of EU precautionary principle.
What did you make of what Lord Mandelson had to say today about the future of trade negotiations between the US and the UK? On the one hand, at one part of the speech, he appeared to be suggesting that it might be possible to negotiate away the 10% reciprocal tariff that is basically across the board now on pretty much everything apart from steel and aluminium and those 100,000 cars. But then later in question and answers, he appeared to concede that that 10% baseline was something that Donald Trump is very wedded to.
Well, I think you've captured the element here. You know, I think if Donald Trump is going to back off his maximalist positions, which were laid out in his Liberation Day speech, remember, with all of the tariffs that were laid out there to compensate, remember, not just for tariffs that Britain or the EU or Japan or other trading partners may have, but also for things that he considers to be trade barriers, such as our high VAT rate, which we apply to ourselves as well as to America. So it doesn't really make sense. But some of our other regulatory restrictions on technology exports, Online Safety Act, the digital services tax, you know, we have a number of things in place in Europe which we consider to be regulatory protections for consumers, which from Trump's standpoint are seen as trade barriers, non-tariff barriers, as they're described. And so I think it's highly unlikely that Donald Trump, you know, having promised 25% plus tariffs across the board, if he drops below 10% as his base rate on a large range of products, and by the way, it won't be on all, I just think it's too much of a concession. So, yeah, on the one hand, Mandelson's angling out there for a maximalist position, but conceding in his Q&A that he's not going to get it. I think he's just being realistic, to be honest.
And do you think it is realistic for the UK to continue pursuing a sort of a twin-track approach to Donald Trump here? On the one hand, the king today drawing a line in the sand and making it absolutely clear it's hands-off Canada. But on the other hand, whether I know you don't like the notion that we were romancing Donald Trump. I mean, is it sustainable to take a carrot and stick approach all the way through until 2028?
Well, look, there's a number of things to say about that. Number one, I think the term I'm using, or I feel best describes what the UK is trying to do. Number one is buy time. A lot of the currying favour is buying time, because the UK and the rest of Europe, by the way, are not ready to pick up the defence burdens that we need to pick up if we're going to keep ourselves safe without American protection. We need to keep America involved in European security, and especially protecting Ukraine, as long as possible, while we collectively, Europeans, start to spend the kind of money we need to spend, and most importantly, acquire the kind of equipment we need to acquire. But we can do this knowing that simultaneously Donald Trump is running multiple negotiations at the same time with the EU, which, as you know, is an incredibly sensitive stage right now, with Japan, with South Korea, with Vietnam, with China. I mean, I could go on. The list is endless. And at a moment of that sort of overload, you could say, in US, the UK, I think, has room to be clever, is the only word I can use, which is try to squeeze through some agreements that are beneficial to the UK, but that don't look like they're cutting across the bows of what the US wants to do with the European Union. And if I look at the rather skeletal UK-US trade agreement,